international detective dragons from outer space.
Hello and welcome, or welcome back to International Detective Dragons from Outer Space. I'm Adam Five, and thank you very much for downloading and listening to episode 62. The topic for this installment is, how many facts do you know are true, but you can't prove? In this episode, we'll hear from Ed the Puppeteer, the Norwegian Viking Mr. T, the Encaffeinated One of The Weird Show, and Arch Nemesis Haxor. Insert comical, glib, or witty comment here. Back in a bit.
We take up the story with Blue Bottle at the top of his 200-foot ladder.
Hey. It's a bit perky up here. Oh, silly little me, I've dropped my toasting fork. Hey, somebody down there, bring up my toasting fork. Oh dear, what can I do now I'm waiting up here? Ding dong de do. Ding dong de ling bling. Oh, I know. Ladies and gentlemen, I will spin you all a riddle. Listen, when is a door not a door? Answer. When it's a jar. Not a sausage for that one. When is a horse not a horse? Answer, when it's turned into a field.
Episode 62 starts now. Oh dear, I think I stole that from somebody. All right, well then, pretend I didn't say it. Hey everybody, think good thoughts and send whatever positive energy you have toward Kurt the Camera Guy. Need a reason? I don't need a reason. Do you? Sophronius Eusebius Hieronymus. Sounds like Latin. Maybe it is. Actually, it's probably all Latin. That's a name. That's a name of, I think, is it the patron saint of opticians? This is a saint that's painted with a lion, a book, and a pair of glasses, predating the invention of the pair of glasses. Why am I talking about that? I don't know. It's on my list here. It's right here at the top of the list of things to cover, just under send good thoughts and positive energy to Kurt the Camera Guy. Go check out the link to the Wandering Geek podcast. Anyway, and download the most recent state of the show. Anyway. Here we go. One of those things where I just take up far more time than I'm supposed to. Actually, you know what? There's no kind of meter here. It's not like I've got this set limit that I'm supposed to follow at the top of the show before getting into emails and feedback. I could go for an hour and then get to emails and feedback, but that doesn't make any sense because the best part of the show is the emails and the feedback. So I'm going to try something new this time. I think I'm going to go back to my original thing of emails and feedback coming at the top of the show and saving all my dumb crap for afterwards. And so that's what I'm going to do. So what are we going to hear? What are we going to do first then? Let's go to the very first feedback that I have to share, which is from Ed the Puppeteer. It's a link. The subject matter is
Link.
Ed writes,
"Hey, I know you love links. I'm not sure if you've seen this one yet. It's a superhero character drawing utility that creates Bruce Timm-style artwork. It's rather intuitive, which is good because it seems to be in Portuguese. The link is..."
And of course he provides the link. I'm not going to attempt to pronounce the name. I'm just going to put it in this show's Goodigatinga-donga-dungs.
Hope you enjoy it, Ed.
Thank you very much, Ed. I did go right to it. I checked it out. I didn't quite spend enough time with it to make it work. I imagine it is kind of intuitive. If I press the right buttons, I don't recognize any of those words. Just for giggles, I ran the page through. I thought, well, you know what? Why don't I just translate this thing? So I ran it through Babelfish. And of the text that Babelfish could translate, this is some of what it came up with.
Welcome to the Plant of Heroes.
I'm guessing that in context, the word plant, as translated, indicates production plant, factory, as you word probably means hero factory.
Welcome to the Plant of Heroes. The Plant of Heroes is a generator of personages based on the Hero Machine, but using character design of Bruce Timm, League of Justice.
So far, so good. This is a translation, remember, from Portuguese.
To create its personages, it is alone to go to the deep one of the page and to click R in the button to create, to choose its model, and to start to mount.
All right. A lot of verbs, apparently. A lot of verbs. Very active, dynamic language, Portuguese. Sadly, it can't translate translate the buttons and the words on the buttons in the actual application itself. As an online app, it has graphics that are endemic to it. Endemic? Indigenous? A part of? They're embedded graphics, obviously, so the words on those can't be translated by Babelfish. Give it a try. A very attractive-looking images that it comes up with, and some folks may have better luck with it than I did. But to be fair, I didn't spend a whole hell of a lot of time trying to make it work, although it looks pretty damn good. Thank you very much, Ed. Let's go right to the next item, which is a forum post by The Encaffeinated One. And this post is feedback on episode 61. The Encaffeinated One writes,
listening to number 61 now, and remembered that I forgot to send in my response for number 60.
Oh, so I guess it's a response to 60 as well.
Ironically, I'm hearing you remark about how you are never anywhere near paper when you see a billboard, which is something I made sure not to have as a problem while listening to number 60. I keep a stack of envelopes on my desk for just such an occasion, and while listening to number 60, scribbled down the following. Always take the time to think if you can, because if you don't, no one else will either. And that's the end for all of us.
Those would be, obviously, if I just, you know, stop to think about it, those are the three sentences that he would place on every billboard on Earth. He continues,
of course, having written it down, I completely forgot about it until right this moment.
Well, as I've said earlier, there's no such thing as late for answers to questions posed on International Detective Dragons from Outer Space, and so, excellent, very glad that you posted about that. He took it a step further, though. The Encaffeinated One took it a step further and decided to come up with some more billboard material and placed it and arranged it in the form of haikus. And here they are.
Coffee stains are art, from a certain point of view, when you look for long. Bitterness is fine when found in coffee or wine, but not on your face. If you can read this, you might be missing something really important. Smiles are really free. But stay far from Mickey D. Make some for yourself. Intelligence is, for want of a better word, beautiful. Eh?
Very fine installments for the haiku hour. All right. I guess the whole point behind haikus is that it doesn't take an hour. They're very succinct. They're very compact. They're very meaningful in the shortest amount of words. Well done, Encaffeinated One. Thank you very much for two excellent forum posts. Stay far away from Mickey D. That would be probably McDonald's. make some for yourself, obviously, is avoid fast foods. Make real food that's healthy and nutritious. Stay away from Mickey D, not Mickey Dillon of Vegas After Midnight, but Ronald McDonald or the fast food chain. I wonder why that one grabbed my attention so much. Probably because over the course of a year, I probably visit McDonald's 6 or 7 times. I guess stretched out over a year, that's not that much. But I should probably avoid it altogether. Anyway, very cool. Very excellent. Very close to the top of the show. And I've already gotten to some of the good stuff here. So I think we're ready to go to a break. I'm going to go to a break now because I can. And when we return, we will hear from the Norwegian Viking, Mr. T. Back in a bit.
Roll on, Biddy Boy. Hello? No, I'm sorry, I haven't. Silly man. Have I got any rooms to let?
Here's your toast and fork.
You fool, you mum, what you're doing with it? Harm can come to a young lad like that.
I'm sorry, my blue bottle.
Becker?
Joe?
Who's holding the bottom of the ladder?
Well, don't worry. I'm holding the...
And back we are, and wonderful indeed it is to hear again from the Norwegian Viking, Mr. T. Long-time listener? Folks, you don't even know. Well, of course you do. If you're a long-time listener also, you know that Mr. T's been listening since, the very, very beginning. The first non-podcaster email to the show came from Mr. T. Okay, let's just read it. Here we go. He writes,
Hi, Adam. My summer vacation has just started, and I finally have some time to charge my batteries and do all the things that Procrasto prevents me from doing during the school semester, like writing in to IDDFOS.
Good deal. Nothing beats downtime. Everybody needs some time to just stop. My mother used to say that. Even a train stops. Of course, actually, she was saying that to me every time I went to open up the fridge when I was in high school. How did I get from Mr. T's vacation to me overeating in high school? It's just that simple, I guess. I don't know. Continuing.
Good to hear that the operation on your dog went well. Sadly, I had to put my own dog down yesterday.
Oh, crap.
It broke my heart, but it was the right thing to do. He had a tumor on his intestines, preventing him from getting rid of his excrement. The options were doing an operation on an 11-year-old dog that had a good chance of being painful and eventually killing him, leaving the tumor and waiting until his intestines burst, bleeding him to death internally, slowly and painfully, or putting him down now, before the worst came. My dog had a long, happy life without any sorts of illnesses. I wasn't about to let him go out screaming. It was sad, but I am thankful I had such a great dog in the first place. Sorry, just had a need to share.
I can say a little bit that I know how you feel. Just a little bit. Had to put a cat down a couple of years ago who was, believe it or not, 15, a 15-year-old cat. So becoming attached to a pet that suddenly has to go like that, I understand a little bit, not entirely, of course, because, well, at any rate, that's very sad news. But I think you're 100% correct. You did exactly the right thing. Very sad. But I guess the best thing to remember is that you did indeed have a great dog. And I actually think about that scenario whenever I start to get irritated with either one of the dogs that I have here. Whenever Basil decides to come in and lick my face while I'm in the middle of doing something, I used to actually get a little bit irritated, and I'd raise my voice or tell her to go lie down or something, and then I just kind of picture in my head the scene, hopefully 5 or 10 years from now, wherein I'm going to have to go through just exactly what you've gone through. And when I picture that in my head, I end up kind of just letting her lick my nose off completely and giving her a big hug while she's doing it. Folks need to remember stuff like that. And we need to move on to some lighter stuff here, which Mr. T acknowledges by writing,
"But on to a lighter note. World of Warcraft was fun, but it's an era about to meet its end at the hands of us Norwegians. We bring you The Age of Conan. Brutal and mature, yes, but damn, what a great game. It has taken the entire genre to the next level. Check it out at www.ageofconan.com.
I'll have the link, of course, in the Kuttingatungatungs.
The female lead vocal in the soundtrack and a programmer are friends of mine, so I kind of feel involved.
Mr. T, is there anybody that you don't know? Is there anybody in the upper echelons of Norwegian entertainment that you don't go bowling with? Holy crap! All right, so Age of Conan, yes. Well, I checked it out. Of course, there were precursors. There were little snippets of this is what it's going to be like in Gen Con. They had a booth set up, unless I'm completely not remembering this correctly, but I think they had a booth set up and some demo play, or at least videos. And so I went to check it out firsthand. Folks, remember I said something about the graphics are just going to keep getting better and better? And this is not exactly one of those things where you can feel like a prophet because you've said this. You can feel like really, really smart because you predicted it. I wasn't predicting jack squat. It's an obvious thing to say. You're not going to be wrong when you say the graphics are going to get better and better in computer games, computer desktop entertainment in general. It's an easy prediction to make because it's just following along a curve that you've witnessed yourself. And you can witness it firsthand by going to that link and checking out their movie feeds. Because they've got a slew of about, when I checked it was, I think, five or six videos to show you what gameplay is like. One of which in particular points up just precisely how intense the graphics are. I'm not positive that my PC can handle Age of Conan, at least not presenting it to its full potential, but I'm going to take a guess that if you've purchased your PC within the past year or two, that it can probably deal with it. And brutal, violent, sure. Graphically intense, amazing. Absolutely amazing. I'm not even going to try to tell you how incredibly cool it is. You've got to check it out for yourself. www.ageofconan.com. And so we continue.
What would I put on a billboard? I like the golden rule, but it can also be misinterpreted. My version would read, "Save the world one act at a time. Do good things to others, and good things will come to you. Do what you can to the best of your abilities, and ask for help for the rest."
I was about to say, in my current state of mind, I couldn't improve on that, but my current state of mind is incredibly fuzzy. Maybe I should check that. Maybe I should just say my general overall state of mind is incredibly fuzzy. But in my most lucid moments, I still don't think I could improve on that. Pretty damn good. I don't think I'd mind seeing that on every single billboard on Earth all at once. Mr. T continues,
"Do good things and good things will come to you is also one of the things I truly believe to be true, but can't prove. Every religion has this saying in one form or another, but I like the karma version the best. Doing what you can to help others around you will inspire the same persons to do what they can to help you back. The trick is doing something kind to others without expecting something in return, because it isn't a debt thing. Do what you can to the best of your abilities. If helping others is at the expense of your own well-being, you should probably find another way to help that doesn't result in you sacrificing more than you can afford to lose. I'm off on my vacation now to Singapore and Sydney. Too bad I didn't save up a few episodes of International Detective Dragons from Outer Space for the 18-hour flight. Hope everything is going great for you. Best of days, T. P.S. Good luck in your new programming career. Here's a great site for references, help, and tutorials with web programming."
And he gives a link to w3schools.com, which I will put in the Kitikatingatangatungs. I have been to them many several times, and they are on my bookmarked favorites list. Thank you, though. I turn down no help. Is there a better way to say that? I don't turn down any help. I don't turn down any suggestions. I don't turn down any advice. As a matter of fact, in the 3D modeling department, Kurt the camera guy was kind enough to point me in the direction of a powerhouse of a program at a real bargain that I'm putting some time and energy into as well. So any help I get from any quarter, and as far as a programming career, well, at this point, if a career is a human being, then my career is the glint in the milkman's eye. For the moment, at present, we'll see. I'm working on it. Thank you very much, Mr. T. It's great to hear from you. It doesn't matter how much time has passed, you write when you can. And from the sounds of things, you don't get an awful lot of time to do much of anything except the work you've got to complete toward that filmmaking program. But a vacation to Singapore and Sydney? You are going to provide plenty of pictures, are you not? And when you do have those plenty of pictures, you are going to give a link to where they can be seen, are you not? Of course you are. We hope. Singapore and Sydney. Furthest I've ever been is the opposite side of the country, California. I'd also have to figure, on an 18-hour flight, I'd probably only be awake for about 12 of it. And I can fit 12 hours worth of podcasts. IDDFOS notwithstanding, I certainly wouldn't be listening to those, but whatever podcasts. It would take several 18-hour flights for me to listen to all the podcasts I'd like to. Not particularly comfortable, though, to be in one seat for that long. You'd have to get up every once in a while and take stretch breaks, I guess, just to walk them down the aisle. How's this for a segue? Speaking of breaks, we're about to go to another one. And when we return, we are going to get some audio of a very ominous nature. Back in a bit.
At the foot of the now fallen ladder, a fresh crisis had arrived. Seagoon is about to ask Bloodnock for the money he had collected in his hat the previous day.
I'm about to ask you for the money you collected in your hat the previous day.
Go ahead.
I want the money you collected in your hat the previous day.
What?
Critpipe Finn wants it as first payment on the materials for building the rocket.
What? Money? I arrest you.
What for?
Resisting arrest.
How about resisting?
I arrest you for not resisting, then.
I'm innocent.
At your age, rubbish. I arrest you for not being in uniform.
I'm not in the services.
What? Then I arrest you for being a coward.
I'm not a coward.
I arrest you for being a hero.
I'm not a hero.
Then you're not a hero and you're not a coward. What are you?
I'm neither.
I arrest you for being a neither.
Give me the money or I'll tell about you and the scout fund.
Oh, there you are, Neddy. Dear Neddy, I was only joking, lad. I was keeping it safe for you, Neddy. You know old Dennis wouldn't do a bell.
Right. There, Moriarty, £20. Tomorrow, we start building the rocket to the sun!
Well, I checked the reindeer line. That's the International Detective Dragons from Outer Space call in and leave voicemail line, 206-350-7809. And imagine my surprise. Because this is what I heard.
This is arch nemesis Hacksaw. I don't know how you got your hands on my internal security logs, but I do know one thing. I will discover why the podcast is called International Detective Dragons from Outer Space. And with it, I will destroy them. Minion, who remapped my soundboard? This is what I get for hiring bossins.
I don't know where to begin with this. I don't know whether I should be annoyed at the fact that I haven't had an arch nemesis until now, that it's taken me 62 episodes to generate an arch nemesis. I would have thought that with a lot of the silliness and crap that I occasionally spew, that by now I would have had at least 3 arch nemesis, but this one will do. Hacksaw, whoever you are, I have a vague general notion who it might be, but I'm not going to name names, because I'm not 100% certain. Plus, if I identify you in the show, and that'll prevent superhero agencies from tracking you down, because you'll be forewarned. However, I never got hold of your internal security logs. One of your minions must have misinformed you. I have no interest in your internal security logs. But if anyone did have an interest in your internal security logs, they could easily obtain them because, as you pointed out yourself, you've hired Bothans. The Bothan Spynet is the largest independent intelligence gathering organization the galaxy has ever known. So it's your own fault if anybody else has gotten a hold of them. And yes, I'm quoting Wikipedia. I can quote Wikipedia if I want to. You need to stop long enough to do a little research on your own before you go hiring Bothans. Then again, if you dismissed all of them, you'd be the only one that doesn't have access to the Spynet. So you're going to have to employ them even a little bit. And I'm very sorry. I'm very sorry to hear that someone has remapped your soundboard. Those of us that have had their soundboards remapped know just how painful that can be. At any rate, I don't employ Bothans. And try as you might, it's not very likely that you're going to find out why the podcast is called International Detective Dragons from Outer Space until next episode, which is when I'm going to explain all that. But do your worst, Hacksaw. It's clear, though, from the tone and general nature of your audio transmission via the reindeer line, that you could use a little help. So I'm going to give it to you. As a matter of fact, I'm going to give it to everyone. And it's in the form of a list of 100 things that you should do as an arch nemesis or an evil overlord. There'll be a link in this episode's Goodikadinkadongadongs, primarily for Hacksaw, but of course for the enjoyment and edification of anyone else that cares to look at it. It is the list of
the 100 things I'd do if I ever became an evil overlord.
Just as an example.
Number 12. One of my advisors will be an average 5-year-old child. Any flaws in my plan that he is able to spot will be corrected before implementation.
One more example.
Number 24. I will maintain a realistic assessment of my strengths and weaknesses, even though this takes some of the fun out of the job. At least I will never utter the line, "No, this cannot be. I am invincible." After that, death is usually instantaneous.
Yes, 100 useful and handy tips to bear in mind and put into practice if you want to be a successful arch nemesis or evil overlord. Now, how many of your enemies, Hacksaw, would go that far as to offer you a helping hand, advice as it were? Now, you can go ahead and call the reindeer line again. That's 206-350-7809. Or email, if you prefer. Though your intent through whatever audio you send is certainly made more clear. And just let me know where I stand so far as having an arch nemesis. Will we hear an end to this? I mean, are you going to quit? Or is this something that we should expect to contend with in the future? I guess we'll find out. Very good, then. I think we've earned another break, and so we're going to go to it. And when we come back, we will find out what this episode's old-time radio genre nugget is going to be. But first we hear this. Back in a bit.
Well, I'm speaking to you from the base of a Martello tower on the Pevensey Marshes. The hammering you can hear comes from a busy band of workers from the village of Milton Street. They are erecting some kind of wooden rocket tied with string on top of the tower. That is what you said, sir, isn't it?
Yes, they are having the joke. Yes, the joke. Now, Siegel, you haven't breathed a word to this BBC Charlie about it, have you?
No, sir, I haven't.
Good.
Ah, Mr. Crun. Well, it looks as if the rocket's nearly ready.
Not quite. We need another layer of brown paper and string on the outside.
Yes, all right. We can't take risks.
No.
Ned, we've just delivered the last lorry of junk, valuables, and I hope you've got the money.
Yes, £30.
Thank you. Now, when will you be taking off?
As soon as we've got the gunpowder and sulfur in the base of the rocket. That's what's going to send us up.
I'm sure it will. And, as a matter of interest, when you get to the sun, how are you going to put it out?
We're each carrying a bucket of water.
By Jove. Are all your family clever?
Only the hybrids.
Touché.
Triché.
Do you come here often?
Only during the mating season. Shall we dance?
Yes.
Okay, then. So, where are we at now? We're at the old-time radio portion of the show. The snippet. The little bit. The genre nugget. This episode, it is from a series called Front Page Drama. And that started in the early 30s. I think the earliest ones that I have in my little batch here are from 1933. This one's from 1934. It's called The Masquerade Mystery. So please enjoy this little bit of that.
Undoubtedly the bandit had a confederate in the house. Well, this list of your guests should be sufficient to run them to earth.
How do you mean, Dr. Battiglia?
I am convinced there are fingerprints on the sheet of paper. So I shall come back tomorrow with my special fingerprint detector. Passion Wolf.
Yes, Doctor?
Put this list back in the drawer and lock it.
Very good, Doctor.
There. Now please see to it that it is not disturbed.
Oh, Dr. Bergion.
Yes?
The man we discovered in the summer house was gagged with this handkerchief.
It's made of fine linen. Initial. H.D.
Wait, the one I gave Henri for his birthday.
How very interesting. And now, if you'll excuse us, we shall retire for the night.
Shall I show you to your room?
Thank you. The butler can direct us. Come, Ashton Wolf.
Right with you, sir. Who do you suspect, Doctor?
It rests among those three in there. I can't say anything further as yet.
Oh, but surely Mademoiselle Dumas is entirely out of it. Why, she's incapable of conspiring to rob her own mother's guest.
One can never tell what anyone will do.
Why did you say that you were convinced that there were fingerprints on the guest list? You know as well as I do that it's impossible to bring out fingerprints on paper.
You'll know before the night is over.
Why, what do you mean, Doctor?
I have found a place from which we can watch the hall stairs in this library door. The guilty person will try to remove that list because of the fingerprint. We'll take turns standing guard all night. Come along. I'll show you where it is.
Shall I stand guard first, Doctor?
Yes, and I'll relieve you at 3 o'clock.
Yes, The Masquerade Mystery, February 8th, 1934... That will be available in its entirety. I think actually it's only about 15 or 16 minutes. It's not one of them half-hour shows, but it will be available for download in its entirety in the Kutikatingatongatongs for episode 62. You know the drill. Right-click on it, save as, and it's yours to listen to if you want to give it a try. And by the way, Haxor, if you're really interested in bringing down international detective dragons from outer space, if you're really interested in destroying the Atom 5 infrastructure, go ahead and listen to most of the old-time radio from the 30s and 40s, and whatever it is that the evil overlord or arch-nemesis did in all of those stories, do the opposite. Now, because of the remix, change-up, experiment, whatever, that has to do with episode 62, mainly, hey, remember Annam? Remember saying that the top of the show was where all the feedback was going to go? Well, remembering that and trying to implement that again, that means that I can now ramble on without too much worry about putting off the best parts, the best part of the show, the bulk of the show, the core of the show, the meat of the show, which is your input. You know, with a name like Pinheiro, you would think I'd be able to easily understand a Portuguese site. It is Brazilian, of Portuguese extract. And yet, I don't even know how to ask where the bathroom is. Wie viele Finger haben Sie? Ich habe 10 Finger. Wir gehen die Treppe hinauf. Alright, I know some German. And I think you just heard all the German that I know. I know a little bit of Ukrainian, too. Дуже добре. You just heard all the Ukrainian that I know. Speaking of Ukrainian, what have I been listening to lately? Well, there's something that you should probably check out in order to be thoroughly educated and amused at the same time. And that would, of course, be the Geologic Podcast's most recent edition as of this recording, episode 72, in which George Robb presents all 118 songs for the periodic table of the elements. Yes, not many, when gazing at the periodic table of the elements, are inspired to write music, a very short ode to each and every one of the elements, from hydrogen to ununactium? Ununactium? Ununactium. Oh, I'm going to put a link in the show notes to the Geologic Podcast. Check out the Geologic Podcast, episode 72, The Periodic Table of the Elements. Actually, it's called Occasional Songs for the Periodic Table. It's undescribably brilliant. It's proof positive that George Robb is every bit the virtuoso that we always knew he was. And there are a couple in there, there are a couple of selections in there that are going to end up being earworms that you won't be able to get out of your head for days. One in particular that stuck in my head for many, many hours was Protactinium, atomic number 91. And I got a particular kick out of Thorium, because you will easily be able to identify a Led Zeppelin tune when you hear that one. Made me laugh. But check them all out. It's lots of fun. This is something that should be burned to CD, put on a shelf, and forwarded to every chemistry professor and physics professor that you know. I personally don't happen to know either a chemistry professor or a physics professor, but if you do, by all means, forward this link to them. They will thoroughly enjoy it. All right, I've already departed from the order on my list of things that I was going to gabble on about, excuse me. So I better get myself up to the top of that list. Pardon me while I readjust my feet. It's been one of those weekends. 4th of July weekend. Just as a little side question here, folks. If you're American, do you find it easier to say 4th of July or Independence Day? I don't often hear people saying, "Oh, I'm really looking forward to the Independence Day weekend." It's always 4th of July weekend, as if 4th of July is a new word all by itself. Sorry, that just crept into my face and was pulling on my eyelashes, demanding to be said. So, my list. A reminder about the forums. That's what I'm reading right now. What am I to remind people of? The forums are up and active. Yes, the capacity on the page of going ahead and being able to click something and register in an automated fashion, as an anonymous outside from anywhere user has been removed, as you could easily see if you visited the forums. But that's not to say that you can't get into the forums, able to do anything and everything that all the members that are on there now can do, simply by writing an email to anim5@anim5.com, and I'll set you up with your account. Certainly would like to see more active members of the forums. If you want to get in, it's a very simple matter of an email, and I set you up and you're in. Like I said in a previous episode, we're trying to keep some very naughty people out that have been trying desperately to get in and no longer can. I shall announce now, next thing on the list, that Odeo is gone. Not that Odeo itself is gone. I think if you actually go to their site, they still somehow exist. But Odeo, so far as IDDFOS is concerned, well, I've tried. But it's been, I think, probably more than a year and a half since I've gotten a successful Odeo input from anyone. And with the 206-350-7809 call-in number, I guess it's kind of unnecessary, particularly since it doesn't appear to work for anyone. I'd very much like to thank Sarah of Does My Geek Look Big in This for having, I think, been the only listener to make use of the Odeo button, the Odeo link. I might be wrong about that, but I think it was just Sarah. At the very least, it was Sarah that used it first. But there just hasn't been any input whatsoever from it, so I removed it from the homepage. No need for it anymore. It was broken. I give up. I finally admit it. Dickie the Stealth Geek knew about it very early on, and had some very descriptive words about it very early on. I'll just say, well, it was free, and we'll move on from there. The Stealth Geek, Dickie the Stealth Geek, speaking of, and happens to be the next thing on my list, check out episode 11 of the Stealth Geek podcast, and you will get an earful of news. Very interesting and portentous news. I'm not going to go any further into it. I'm going to leave that as a mystery for you to check out. Episode 11 of the Stealth Geek podcast, please do. You'll find their link, of course, among the permanent links on the IDDFOS homepage. Next on my list, thanks very much once again to the Encaffeinated One for playing my promo very recently in his Feedback Special Edition. Actually, it was last week's. He's already come out with another one where he features feedback from his listeners. I guess in order to give it as much time as it needs and still be able to do his full hour show. So you've got now the Weird Show plus a special edition of Feedback. If and when he has enough, I imagine, to put out that second show. So good on you, Encaffeinated One. Glad to see that you're getting the kind of attention that you should be getting, and I hope more folks take him up on his offer to leave that kind of feedback. Audio, email, or otherwise. But yes, that was a thank you for once again playing my promo. Other podcasts. What have I been listening to that I really like lately? Well, the first thing at the top of that list was the recommendation for the occasional songs for the Periodic Table of the Elements. That, of course, was the Geologic Podcast. What else is on the list and what's new? Well, Geek Girls Rule is a new podcast. As of this recording, I think there's only 5 episodes out. And it is done by Mickey. Mickey, you will remember, having heard on the Stabbing Contest, and who has done extensive blogging and writing. What can I say? It's new, it's interesting, it's entertaining, it's worth checking out, Geek Girls Rule. I would certainly love to play a promo for it. I can't actually seem to get a hold of one. I don't see one on the home pages. Same goes for the Stabbing Contest. I imagine sometime soon they'll come out with one each, and then I'll be able to go ahead and play those. But I recommend Geek Girls Rule. I will put the link to that in this episode's Gurikatinkatankatungs. I'm pretty sure I've already played the promo for The Bear Swarm. the Bear Swarm podcast, another RPG podcast. Folks familiar with role-playing game and gaming in general podcasts already know about RPGpodcasts.com, and will have seen these as new additions to the list long before my recommendations here. But if you haven't, then I recommend also The Bear Swarm. It's great fun. Great fun, great guys. Not work-friendly, neither is Geek Girl's Rule, but I don't know. How many folks out there actually do listen to podcasts out loud at work? And the next one on the list, this is the third one and the final one. It's Brilliant Gameologists, and they apparently have been around for a while. They've got quite a few episodes out. They don't pull any punches, let's put it that way. They're kind of hardcore. They talk about role-playing games. They talk about their game-playing experiences. They talk about convention experiences. They review specific games, and they're none too gentle when they don't like one. They swear a lot. And they never, ever make use of sexual innuendo. They just come right out and say, I want to stick that in the and plus they're energetic and they're current, and I laugh a lot when I listen to them. That's Brilliant Gameologists. Their link too will be in the Gooditongatongatongs, and I probably played a promo for them as well. Next on the list, I haven't got good segues to any of this stuff because it's all over the place, and I knew I was going to be rambling a bit here, so I really kind of wanted to push this towards the end because Coherence, thy name is not Anim 5. I picked up a copy on DVD, don't ask me why, of Mad Monster Party. Why would I do that? Well, first of all, because it was easy. There it was, right there in the rack, facing out, up front, as I was walking down the aisles of the A&P doing my regular shopping. $12.99. A little piece of your childhood for $12.99. I gotta say, sometimes it's better not to check some of these things out. It was 1966. The thing came out in 1966, and I'm pretty sure that my mother took both my brother and I to go see this thing in the movie theaters. An Embassy Pictures release, Mad Monster Party. And of course, a Rankin-Bass production, the same, we're talking exactly the same style and methodology that they used to produce Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, all those puppet specials from the 60s. That probably could have learned a hell of a lot from George Pal and the Puppetoons, because in some cases they just didn't do it as well. But there it was. I'm sure I picked it up for the same reason that I was playing those music TV theme clips from three shows ago, I can't remember what episodes I used them in, but things that tickle the childhood portion of your brain and somehow generate that electric buzz inside the head of nostalgia, recognition, primal familiarity. But looking at the thing through adult eyes, it's just, wow, what a piece of crap. Mad Monster Party. From the sublime to the ridiculous. What was the sublime? Well, Boris Karloff doing the voiceover for Dr. Frankenstein. The ridiculous, Phyllis Diller. Phyllis Diller. One of those popularity mysteries. I mean, absolute, total mysteries. She was popular with who? And why? I don't know. All right, let's move past Mad Monster Party. What did I see? I'm going to include a link to an article, a CNN article, about fake tiger photos that were circulated, worldwide, but came up in China. There was a province in China where they were offering 20,000... I don't know what. What is the Chinese dollar? Well, 20,000, the local equivalent of dollars, to whoever could come up with proof that a certain species of tiger still existed, even though it hadn't been seen in that area for 20 years. Well, some fella got a good color reproduction, a good color poster-sized photo of that very kind of tiger, and propped it up in among the jungle and borrowed a digital camera and took pictures of it and collected the money. And it was stated essentially that experts, local officials and experts, have examined the evidence and concluded that they were not faked and were generally trying to cash in on the so-called fact that this tiger was rediscovered by this guy, this farmer hunter, in order to generate tourism in their area, bring people in. And because of the fact that the things ended up online, the population, the savvy, graphically savvy population of China, came up with the original poster that this guy took the picture from, cut out the picture from, and displayed that next to his fake, essentially proving in an instant that the guy scammed everybody. And yet the officials stuck to their story, saying, no, 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 it's real, in the face of clear evidence that the thing was totally faked. And it just, the firestorm that it generated was over the inefficiencies of everybody from the game warden to the, I don't know, prefecture of the province. Whatever the political structure is there, there was quite a shakeup with all kinds of firings and punishments and et cetera, because the government was finally forced to drop the BS. And what it harkens back to, essentially, what really catches my attention is that it brings up that question again. Can we prove anything to be true? Simply because digitally, if we're careful enough, if we're not stupid like this guy was, if we're careful enough, we could prove digitally that it's true. With a bit of Photoshop savvy, he probably could have come up with some obscure, really obscure pictures of this particular tiger, changed its position a little bit, altered it, placed that in among the jungle, etc. You can't prove anything because you can prove anything. And if you're looking for digital realism, if you're looking for, aside from ageofconan.com, and three-dimensional realism as far as environments go, just in still images, there's a site that I will recommend and place the link to in the Kunikatingatongatongs, and it's called Renderosity. Renderosity.com. Landscapes, people, objects, just their TerraGen contest. TerraGen is a piece of software that generates artificial landscapes. They had a contest for that. Just check out the TerraGen gallery for images that look as real as anywhere you could set foot on Earth. And taking the safe stance again, I'm going to say up front that if you can do a still image that looks that good, it's only a matter of time before you're either looking at it on your screen in a game environment in full motion, or with a headset on, or a pair of glasses on that places you in that environment. It's gonna get that good. And the faces that you're looking at, and some of the renderings of the humans that they have available on that site, are that good. Renderosity, fantastic place just to look at what's being done. A terrific resource for anybody that's involved in 3D modeling. And a terrific resource for anybody that's interested in the state of computer graphics as it exists today. The high-end folks play here. The folks that can afford 3D Studio Max, I certainly can't. And by the way, if anybody within the sound of my voice knows how I could actually get a hold of a legal copy of 3D Studio Max that doesn't cost $3,500, I'd be more than happy to follow whatever directions you can give me, because it seems to be one of the mainstays, one of the standards, but holy crap, is that a lot of money. All right, it's break time. I'm going to interrupt myself here because I'm going to ramble on for a while more, and we're going to go to a break. Back in a bit.
Sinful people, you must take off as soon as possible. The Sussex police have heard of the rocket, and I've got to try and stop it.
Curse, this could ruin everything. Sigun, tell them all to speed up.
Everybody, speed up! And light the old wick now. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
And we're back, and now we hear from me again. This is weird. I wonder if we're going to keep this up. Yeah, I should probably do it this way from now on. Do the feedback at the top of the show and not make people... Because I've got all this stuff that I like to just ramble about. I've got all this stuff that really just puts off what people listening to the show have to say. And I'd rather stick it here towards the end. Let's take an opportunity, before I forget, the music bed behind all this, behind all of my weird... gambling ramblings, is from an album called Holburn's Passion, and it is performed by a very talented lute soloist in London, England, whose name is Jacob Herringman. And his album and his other three albums are available at magnatune.com. Very good. Just wanted to get that in there. All right, now... I mentioned, I think it was at the top of episode 60? No, 61. Because 60 was the roundup episode. I was talking about telephone poles. I was talking about the possibility of putting just 3 foot by 3 foot solar panels, 9 square foot solar panels, at the top of all those telephone poles that you see. And I was speculating about just how many telephone poles there are that could be done with. And I said I was going to count how many I saw on the way to work. I don't recommend you do this if you're driving. Particularly if you're driving. Don't try to count how many telephone poles there are as you drive from one point to another. It's too dangerous. It's also not really possible. Because I was having a hard enough time, and I wasn't driving. Mrs. NM5 was driving. Before I got an eighth of the way to work, I counted 400. I was roughly about one-eighth of the distance traveled to get to work, and I had already reached approximately 400. I'm sure I missed a bunch of them. I just generally counted everyone I laid my eyes on. It was a silly thing to do, but I was just curious. Well, why did I do that? Well, I wanted to get an idea, a kind of a rough idea of numbers. And even if I had an absolute accurate count of every single telephone pole within direct line of sight on the way to work, it would really kind of be pointless. What you really need to do is find out just how many there are in the United States. Well, I did. Well, I came close to it anyway. All right, I went to the American Wood Protection Association. That's www.awpa.com. I'll put a link to it in the Kutukatungatungatungs. And this is what they say.
The most recent information we have available regarding the number of utility poles, communications, and power transmission and distribution in the U.S. is around 134 million.
And then they give a breakdown of how many belong to who. All right. Now, this is information that they have from 1997. I don't imagine all that many new ones have gone up since 1997, because once they're in place, they're pretty much in place until somebody tragically runs into one of them. So what does that mean? 134 million utility poles in the United States. I guess what I was trying to get what I was trying to get at was a footprint, a square footprint of how many solar panels that would mean. And I figured I'd just cut that number in half. Just putting a solar panel at the top of half of them, that'd mean 67 million utility poles with a photovoltaic cell at the top of it. And so why was I interested in this footprint? Well, it all goes back to that pie-in-the-sky dream thing of actually making use of the outrageous amounts of land being bombarded by the sun in the United States. That's just there. I'm going to quote somebody else. A hell of a solar energy education resource page, and I'll put a link to that too. Here's the quote.
The United States Department of Energy indicates the amount of solar energy that hits the surface of the Earth every hour is greater than the total amount of energy that the entire human population requires in a year. Another perspective is that roughly 100 square miles of solar panels placed in the southwestern U.S. could power the country.
Forgetting about whether that's feasible or not, forgetting about whether that's possible or not, I'm assuming that it's true. If it were done, it would be true. I'd be quite surprised, but if it were 100 square miles of area that needed to be covered, then I think we've got enough land in the southwest where the sun keeps beating down day after day, where you got way more than 6 hours of available peak sun. Anyway, 1 square mile has 27,878,400 square feet. So, if you took a 9-square-foot panel, you'd need 3,097,600 of them to make up 1 square mile. And rounding up, roughly speaking, if you wanted to make up that 100 square miles that they're talking about in that paragraph I just read, you'd need 310 million solar panels, 310 million utility poles with 3-foot squares at the top of them. And it would probably be and just for materials, at about $100 per panel, $30 billion. $31 billion to scatter all those panels all over the place at the tops of these poles. Labor-intensive, not quite the best idea in the world, particularly when other people have already figured out how to do this better. And rather than go on at length about that, I've already gone on too long about this. I went calculator happy, and I found a whole bunch of conversion sites that converts energy conversion sites. I'll put a link to that. Feet, area, square inches conversion sites. Really, really useful online applications that allow you to calculate some pretty wacky stuff. But just as a point of interest, and an article to a Scientific American posting that has to do with a genuine plan for actually getting solar energy to power the country. Actually, by 2050, a plan that sets up a solar energy system that provides 7 times more power than we're using now. But just as a point of interest, if we actually did have 67 million panels at the tops of all the of half the utility poles in the country, it would generate 24 billion watt hours per day, or the equivalent of 26.5 power stations, the size of the Decker Creek Power Station in Austin, northeastern Austin, Texas. I don't know what possessed me to go into all that calculations. Just having gone over this, looking at all my notes, I left out a lot of different numbers that, as I was reading numbers, I'm thinking to myself, this is not entertaining. This is not interesting. It might have been easier for me to say, well, if you put solar panels at the top of 67 million poles, utility poles, then you would generate the equivalent of 26.5 power plants. And it would cost $31 billion to do. Actually, it would probably cost $62 billion, double that, because $30 billion is just covering the costs of the panels themselves. Oh, heck. I'm going to move on to the next thing that really caught my interest this week. And then we're going to move on to... No, actually, you know what? I'm going to take another break. You deserve a break after listening to all that crap I just spewed. So we're going to go ahead and do that and cut to a break. Back in a bit.
Truth is stranger than fiction. This is the truth. This is Ripley's. Believe it or not. Judge Henry Jodrell of the Criminal Court of Great Yarmouth, England, after serving 21 years on the bench, resigned to avoid having to pronounce his first death sentence. Believe it or not. In a moment, I'll tell you about the corpse that stopped a mutiny.
Oh, dear, oh, dear. After all that work. It's sad, Moriarty, it's sad. However, let's count the money. 10, 20, 30.
Oh, dear, those poor fools.
Yes.
A wooden rocket. A wooden rocket, I ask you. You're trying to put out a fire on the sun.
Yes.
They deserved to die, didn't they?
Yes, they did, Murata.
Oh, 25, 26 million, 28.
30. Moriarty, isn't it gone dark? They couldn't have.
Help! They put out the sun!
No!
Oh, my God!
Many times, superstition and fear changes the course of events in history. When the citizens of Toulouse rebelled against King Henry III of France, they murdered Jean Durante, Speaker of the local Parliament, and as an act of contempt, propped up his corpse in front of a portrait of the king he loved and served. Suddenly, a strange thing happened. Durante's body slipped down to his knees in a position of reverence. The rebels, upon witnessing this, were so unnerved that they abandoned their mutiny. Believe it or not.
And back we are again. Let me take my headphones off, because I can't hear myself. All right, what was that next thing that caught my interest? This was an article that I'm going to link to about a donation of a record collection. Not just any record collection, but 200,000 78 RPM record albums owned by the late Morton Savada, who died in February of this year at the age of 85. The collection was valued at $1 million, and it weighed 50 tons and represented half a century of American music history. What is this? Does this tie in with anything in particular? It ties in with a bunch of stuff. It ties in with my penchant for preserving the past, my preoccupation with things of an archival nature, which I suppose is a direct outgrowth of my experience of cataloging and databasing for the past 15 years. Of the fluid mountain of crap, as I usually called it, belonging to the paper mill. And it also ties into that V-groove thing I was talking about. The giant scaled-up version of the record album Groove, reproduced in concrete on a vast scale. So what about this? What have we got here? We've got 200,078 RPM records collected by this guy, donated to the University of Syracuse. Check out the article, very interesting. Once again, I got out my calculator and did a little bit of figuring just to fantasize about what kind of a job it would be to convert all that into modern audio. Now, some 78 RPMs were 10 inches, some were 12 inches. The 10-inch ones had about 3 minutes capacity per side. The 12-inch ones had 4 to 5 minutes capacity per side. Because remember, they're not 33 and a third. They're not long playing records. They're not the LPs invented in 1948, which had 20 minutes per side. They're 78 RPMs. They're spinning around really fast, so the needle gets to the end quite quickly. Averaging it, let's go by average. Let's assume 3 minutes per side. That means six minutes of available audio per album. At 200,000 albums, that means 20,000 hours of audio in this guy's collection. 20,000 hours of audio. Now, in the year 2008, there were 262 business days, work days, not counting holidays. Now, if you worked, if it were your job to digitize all this stuff, let's put it this way, if it were my job to digitize all this stuff and I was the only guy working on it, I figure 262 work days just to be conservative. That would mean 2,096 hours in a year, figuring an 8-hour day. You'd have to, of course, subtract 262 hours for lunch breaks. That leaves you with 1,834 hours in a year, which would mean it would take approximately 11 years to listen to every one of these albums. That's continuous listening to all of this audio. That doesn't allow time for taking the album out of its sleeve, placing it on the mechanism that you're going to reproduce it with, setting up the capture mechanics of turning it into a digital format, and then pressing play. That whole process will subtract over time, over the course of a year, probably a couple of hours too. But it would take one person roughly 11 years to listen to this. What did it say? How many tons was this? Look again at this. 50 tons. 50 frickin' tons is how much this collection weighs. These vinyl 78 RPM discs. Today, of course, we can do better than that. Today, of course, we could lighten it up a bit. If I had the 11 years to do it, and technology did not change from the way it is today, figuring an audio CD at its top quality of a regular standard play in any player, 74 minutes a side, audio CD, that allows you 16,216 minutes. Now, if one CD weighs 15 grams, I told you I went calculator crazy. And I found all these sites that convert things. I can't help it. I don't want your eyes to glaze over. I'm just trying to make some interesting facts about this mammoth thing that this guy donated to the University of Syracuse. As it is, they already had 200,078 RPM records themselves. They were like the second largest repository of audio in, I think, the world. They were second only to the Smithsonian. Now they're getting 200,000 more. All right. If a CD weighs 15 grams and you need, I was wrong. It's 16,216 CDs to equal the 200,000 records that he's donating, which means, in grams converted to pounds, 536 pounds and 4 ounces. So just digitizing all that stuff would mean that you take 50 tons and turn it into 536 pounds. Much more manageable. And I figured reducing the audio and it, as part of the same process, as part of the same archival process, saving it as WAV files that can be turned to regular Redbook CDs, fine. But also making some MP3s out of them at the same time. So you've got the file size of the wave, and then reduce that 2/3. So with all those files at 1/3 the original, then it would end up being 5,405 CDs. And I didn't get the weight on that. Kind of wish I had. I didn't get any further into this. Don't panic yet. I'm not going to go crazy here with this stuff. Too late, Enum. I didn't figure out how much more I could reduce that, putting it onto DVDs. How many MP3 audio files of these record sides could you fit on one DVD, figuring 3 minutes per side? Interesting math problem. I don't know if anybody out there is really into it, but the variables are many. But it would probably come out to significantly less than 536 pounds. So who's at the advantage here? Who's got the advantage? First of all, in 11 years, of course, if anybody's interested in really doing this, they wouldn't hire one person to do all 200,000 records. They'd hire a team, or they'd make student interns do it, which is probably what's going to end up happening. It's probably already begun. And they'd get it done in much, much less time than 11 years. But if it did take 11 years, the technology for sound reproduction and audio and all that stuff, 11 years from now, MP3s are probably going to be supplanted by something else. So all the work that you started out doing would be obsolete already. And in the end, what really wins is the vinyl record itself. Because if some asteroid ended up whacking into the Earth to the extent that two-thirds of the world population gets wiped out and all the animal life, and there's just this straggling band of post-apocalyptic humans wandering around in the Syracuse University area, if they got hold of these albums that miraculously survived and pulled them out of the wreckage and glued a little rose thorn onto an empty, hollow, lightweight gourd and balanced it on a stick because Grandpa remembers something about these things and what they could do, and they stuck one of these things on the center of a potter's wheel and just spun it with their feet, you could still listen to the vinyl 78 RPM LP, albeit not quite as accurate as it was originally intended to be played, but you could still listen to it. The DVDs? You're screwed. Another one of those films that was a hell of a lot more impressive when I was a kid, H.G. Wells' The Time Machine. A scene from it is flashing up in my head. That scene where he finds the ancient library and spins the little rings on the table that tell the story. I don't know. Well, I'm going to put a link in the Gudigatangatangatungs to the Wikipedia definition of 78 RPM record. There's more information there than you'll ever want to know about it. And, of course, that will go with... There's going to be a lot of links for this show. A whole hell of a lot of links for this episode. My deepest apologies if they're not available immediately, but... Time's winged chariot has run me over. I think it's more than time to get to the closing music for this show. Yeah... The closing music, it is going to be from that same album, Holburn's Passion, by Jacob Herringman, the lute music that you've been listening to all this time underneath my rambling whatever. And this individual piece is 1 minute long. It's called As It Fell on a Holly Eve. Is that a parody or what? Is that a stereotypical Renaissance lute title? Or what? As It Fell on a Holly Eve. Well, please enjoy. Thank you. And so you have reached the merciful end of episode 62. It came out late. It's in a somewhat different shape than you might be used to, but we'll see how that works out. If you really don't particularly like incredibly long ramblings at the end of the show, which is really what this was, write in, let me know. Call in on the reindeer line, let me know. But as we have reached the end of episode 62, I'm going to say thank you again to those that have written in. Ed, the puppeteer. The Norwegian Viking, Mr. T. Enjoy the hell out of that holiday. Have fun in Singapore and Sydney. Make those pictures available and take lots of them. The Encaffeinated One of The Weird Show. Thank you for those forum posts and the comments on earlier episodes. And the haikus. I probably shouldn't say thank you to Haxor, as he has vowed to destroy this show, but I'm going to say thank you anyway. Thank you, Arch Nemesis, for using the reindeer line. And, of course, I'm going to thank you for listening. Did I forget? Did I forget the question for episode 63? I think you could probably guess what the question's going to be. I bet some of you have already thought of it as the question to ask. In a way, I may have already asked it. So long as I'm doing this audio tie-in, yes, you did guess right. Only, here's the particulars. I've already mentioned the possibility of the full, scaled-up record album V-Groove reproduced in concrete that you can drag a stick along attached to a resonator that plays back whatever it is you want played in a post-apocalyptic world. Let's say whatever disaster happens, happens. There's only a small portion of the human populace left. It wasn't radiation. It was something else. So we're not talking about the elimination of the human species along with everything else. Let's say, I don't know, asteroid strike. Some wild virus that very few had immunity to. Anyway, two generations from now, suppose the knowledge was maintained as to how to make use of one of these long scaled-up troughs, and you had 3 minutes. You had 3 minutes of audio just to emulate the 78 RPM. Whether it's the concrete reproduction or the actual 78 RPM with a rose thorn or something sticking on it and playing in the groove, what would you put on the album? Would it be a message in your language? Would it be a piece of music? Would it be a recording of something else? What would you put on that record album for two generations from now to listen to after a cataclysmic end of civilization, with everyone back to, I guess, Middle Ages, with everyone back to not so much Stone Age, although if we don't start teaching kids how to make fire without matches, we're going to end up like that. What would you put on the recording? All right. Boy, that was saving it to the very end. So that'll be for episode 63. That, of course, will also be the episode in which I explain why the podcast is called International Detective Dragons from Outer Space. And I hope you'll join us for that, but until then, I hope everything goes very well for you. And until then, best of days.
This is a thought. A thought. A thought. Remember, listen for another adventure of...
International Detective Dragons from Outer Space.